So, Ten, have you ever heard of the concept of meta-watching?
No, tell me about this. I love this idea. Verbally, it sounds so tantalizing.
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
Ted, it's another Friday night here in the wonderful world of Trailer Junkies Podcast, and it's episode 161. What's happening this week?
161. Not much.
Not much.
I got a new beta release on my Airtable this week, and I got super excited.
So it's not the VHS release, it's the beta release?
No, there's a plug-in, so now my Salesforce system will now talk to my Airtable system, so it's very exciting for me.
You know how like different companies do beta if you sign up for the beta, but otherwise you don't have to have the beta? Is that kind of where you are with it?
Yeah, no, we had a meeting with our crew over there at Airtable, and they were like, oh, we have this product. And then, you know, I shared my screen and I was navigating there, and they're like, oh, it's not on your build. And then he looked it up and he goes, oh yeah, it's still in beta. So let's see if we can push that out to you. So they pushed it out to me and I checked it immediately and it wasn't there. And I was like, all right, just give it till the morning. Maybe the technicians are pushing it out. And then the morning it was there. And I was like, all right, now I'm going to really build it out.
And you know, the guys over at Airtable are like, hell yeah. At the end of it, they're like toasting. We got Disney, man. Man, we got Disney. That's amazing.
How was your week?
Well, how about we celebrate with opening a beer first before we get to our week
and right.
Airtable. I mean, every week is Airtable with this guy. So I'll jump ahead since you asked.
Please. You do.
You heard of Topa Topa out of Santa Barbara?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, cool.
Tell me.
They're out of Santa Barbara, and I just really wish I had eyeglasses because some of the stuff is so small, but it's a Black Wing Imperial Stout barrel aged. It's 10.5%, 41 IBU. It's a bourbon barrel aged, bottled on 11/20/2017. So November 20th, about 4 years ago. Yeah,
aged.
We're looking at an old bottle here. And so I told Clarissa, I said, you know, I kind of worked through a lot of beers over these many months that I had these in the fridge.
Yeah.
And, you know, I pull out like $30 to $40 bottles of beer. I'm like, and I turned them all back to her. I said, pick one, because like I couldn't bring myself to choose, because
your babies
exactly. They've been like, it's oh god. So she picks and I said, are you really sure you want that one? Because like I couldn't see any of them go, but then at the same time I bought them to drink, right?
Yeah, you didn't buy them to look
exactly
at
exactly. I could store them forever, but then you never. But anyway, this is like about 3.5 year old beer. So yeah, I'm gonna open this sucker and share it with the wife. And
nice.
You know, what do you have?
So I also have an Imperial Stout.
Last week when I said all we do is drink stouts and IPAs, that's why I had the Kolsch. Another week of stout, both of us.
I know, but they're good. They're good. I'm sure this will be good.
Yeah.
Mine is only 10 ABV.
I beat you by a half.
You beat me by half a percentage there. 60 fluid ounces, one pint, a can. It says, cheers to the brave champions of the community.
Whatever that means.
Cheers to the urban knight. That's why it's like the urban knight. I don't know what that means.
Where did you get that? Is that from Handy Market?
This is from the Handy Market stash. Yes, I'm still doing that because we did the hand brewed. So let's see what this does.
So Handy Market, but so that was from your last visit? Because I know that was like a reunification.
That was like a month ago, I think.
Yeah, that was like a reunification visit, right?
Yes. And I bought like 4 or 5 beers, so that's 4 or 5 weeks.
I always think that too. I'm like, I bought 6 beers. That's 6 weeks of the show.
you know, you're buying other beers and stuff in between, but there's the show beers, you know.
Show beers are like extra special beers that I have only with Ted. Like, you don't just waste a show beer. Like, you don't spend $40 on a beer and then drink it willy nilly. Oh no, you got
to drink it without. You have to immortalize it in audio.
That's exactly right, man. This beer will last. Like, when I'm dead and gone, the boys are gonna discover like a folder on my computer, like, MP3 shows, what's this? And they're gonna open up and be like, episode 1 episode 2, there's 577 of these. They're all 2 hours long.
That's hilarious. I went and I was doing the show art for last week's
yeah
pod,
we didn't get that yet,
and I know, and I finally put it up. Yes, this is my apology. Hopefully this one will be up in time. But I went in and I was correcting it, and I was, you know, using the old one to put in the new one, and it went from...
I don't know what that means.
I was using like the old one as a template.
Oh, template. Okay.
So I have 159, and it was changing to 160, and I was deleting really quickly. And when I punched it all up, it said episode 1560, because I didn't delete
Ted's
the five,
hopeful.
Right?
Ted, you just aged me by like 25 years. If I'm doing this, it's like, welcome to episode 1599, whatever. Amazing. So yeah, the week though, so man, it's been super windy, and we have our chimney cap that rusted through. When I was up pruning the oak tree and stuff, I looked across. I was up in the tree. I looked across. I looked at the chimney, you know, just it's what you do.
Checking it out. Yeah. You're up there.
Yeah, you look at the chimney. And I saw the chimney cap was like all kind of like half crooked and like smashed in sort of. And I thought, what in the? So I go up on the roof. I get up there and it has like, I don't know, 50 fins or something around it, the spark arrestor.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And there's like three holding it in place. The rest are all rusted through. So I was just, oh God.
Oh wow.
So I order a new one and I measure it. I learn all I need to learn about chimney caps, because you have to, because there's like 1,000 varietals of chimney caps.
Right.
So of course you have to, of the 1,000 varietals, you have to pick the one that you have. So, you know, I get it, and it's been, I mean, the wind gusts have been 25 to 30 miles an hour, and I'm just like, okay, I'm going to wait until, like, tomorrow morning, because it shows up at FedEx today. I'm going to wait tomorrow morning because I don't want to get blown off the roof.
Right, right.
You know, it's just horrible. The wind is so high. But that was that. And then I got the garden in this week. So it's springtime.
Nice.
And we have the garden. I have tomatoes. We had, you know, some peppers. We have cabbage. We have, I did start some squash and jalapenos from seed, some acorn squash.
Oh, nice.
And jalapenos from seed. So those are there. We got worms for the compost pile. The peaches are going strong. The apple tree's going strong. So
are you guys doing ladybugs too?
Yeah, we did ladybugs and praying mantis.
Do they stay? Do they stay around?
I don't know where they are. They're tiny. They're ladybugs. I can't find them. But the praying mantis seem to be in the yard. Every time I look at something, I see a praying mantis, you know? So I'm like, oh, cool. They're hanging around.
Oh, that's awesome.
But yeah. Oh, and then we have, what else do we have? We have onions, potatoes. So yeah, we have a lot of stuff in the garden. I don't know. We'll see. So
mm-hmm.
I always, you know, this is, oh, and then I've been working this blackberry bush that we've had all these blackberries for, oh man, since we moved in. I don't know when they got planted. They probably got planted 20 years ago for all I know, but we've been in the house for about 11 years, never had a blackberry. So I've been working, I've been watering and feeding and fertilizing and trying to get this tons of flowers on it. So it looks like we might have blackberries this year, so that's exciting. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. When I was growing up in DC, that was, we only didn't really have a garden per se. but we had a Concord grape trestle.
Oh, okay.
So we had Concord grapes, which are super bitter, and they had tons of seeds in it and thick skin.
Right.
But I ended up eating them anyway because they're there.
Now, are those the purple ones?
They were not. These are the green ones. But they did. Okay. Typically, there's a purple and a green. We had both, but the green ones lived longer. But at the bottom of the hill, we had blackberry bushes that were only when I was a child, like. I think when I was in single digits, that's when we had that. And I remember just hanging out at the bottom of my yard, like eating blackberries off this blackberry bush and digging in the dirt around there. And I excavated a couple of wine bottles.
Is this the old historic home?
Yeah, yeah. This is the old farmhouse in DC. And I excavated a couple of wine bottles and a couple of buttons. So one of the previous owners of the house was a
signature Ben Franklin.
No, he was the police. He was the fire chief.
Oh,
he was the fire chief for the area
from like 1875.
Exactly. Well, you know,
or whatever,
yeah,
but old.
Well, yeah, early on, like 19th turn of the century, 1900s, 1900. And apparently he had a bit of a drinking problem. So he probably went down to the blackberry bush and drank some wine and hid down there. And like one night his jacket must have popped some buttons. And I had some fire chief buttons that I dug out of the ground as a kid eating blackberries.
That's cool, though. You don't still have them.
No. I mean, I was a kid. Come on. I don't even have, like, yeah, I was not an organized child.
Yeah, but I was going to say, my father-in-law hoards everything, so.
He would.
That's hilarious. So how about you? How was your week?
Well, we know about the Airtable, that, and then, you know.
Family-wise,
yeah, you know, we're plodding along. We're finishing up school. School is about to end. Next week is our last week, so this week is like.
Yeah, we're there too.
Finals are starting this week, and it's just like, Audrey's so stressed out about finals.
Is she a freshman? She's a freshman, right?
She's a freshman, yeah. And I, so it's so funny. I have a 15-year-old and 11-year-old, a girl and a boy. And she's, you know, this straight A student and just trying, you know, like extremely dedicated to the craft, whatever.
On her way to Berkeley. Like, yeah, totally.
Yeah. And then he's a straight A student, but it's just a struggle every day. Every day it's a struggle.
Reluctantly on his way to Berkeley.
No, he's on his way to Berkeley. I don't know if you know the Berkeley and Berkeley.
No, I don't.
There's Berkeley. So Berkeley is the University of California, right?
Okay, right. Yeah.
And there's another school that's called Berkeley. It's
okay.
L-E-E at the end. And it's a music business school.
Oh, okay.
And it's also like NorCal or Central Cal or something like that. And all these people were telling me they went to Berkeley. And I was like, oh, and why are you in music? And they're like, this is the premier music business school in the world. I was like, okay, sorry.
Wait, more than Juilliard?
Well, it's Juilliard's arts. Yeah, this is like... when you write a song, how to make
produce
sure that the
it and how to
people
sell
don't
it and all that
screw
stuff.
You over. Yeah. but anyway, so I have Audrey, and on one hand, Audrey's like freaking out about her finals. And I'm like, you know what? Going to high school, I, you know, I can't tell you the grades that I got in high school. I know that I got out and I was like summa cum laude or something like that, or honors in high school, summa cum laude in college, my undergrad. But I couldn't tell you what grades I got. You know what I mean? Like, don't stress out about the grades themselves, you know?
I would say I'm not smart enough to have student loans. Right? They wouldn't let me into the schools that I needed to have student loans to have. But you know what? That doesn't matter because I'm successful today and
exactly.
That's all that matters.
Exactly.
Right.
But then I turn around, and luckily I was in, you know, in Audrey's room alone with her telling her that, because I go outside and Bryce is like playing Legos instead of, you know, being in class, and like he's in class, but he's got Legos all over his desk. And I'm like, what are you doing? He goes, well, it's math. You know, I was like, yeah,
I'm engineering.
So what is Legos? What does Legos have to do with math? I was like, you have finals next week.
It's architectural engineering. Don't you know, you old man?
But I was like, how different could this approach be to these two different children? And it's so funny that they're raised in the same house and they're like night and day.
Well, we say all the time how Tim and Audrey and Mike and Bryce.
Yeah.
I mean, they are kindred spirits, both of them. I mean, Tim is like the straight and narrow, gets it done.
Uh-huh.
You know, he just works, you know, and Mike is just, he does like what you see and he tells you he did the rest. Thinking you're not going to turn the page to see he didn't do anything else.
Right.
And it's like, Kato, I'm not, you know, like I'm looking at your work and I see you did nothing.
Oh, I didn't think you'd check.
Exactly. I mean, they are just both of them. They're just both kindred spirits.
Don't make me more tired. Oh, it's God, Friday night.
I know. So speaking of kids, Ted, were you a G.I. Joe kid?
Oh, come on. I'm wearing the shirt.
Oh, he's wearing the shirt. Look at this. I love it.
We were prepping for the pod.
How did I not notice? It's behind your microphone.
I know. It's in the shade of the spit, the Esser, the de-esser.
Yeah, the pop filter.
But we were watching the pop filter. We were watching the trailers to this afternoon with Bryce. And we're playing the trailers, and he was like, oh. And Bryce's first thing was like, oh, a Mortal Kombat trailer. I was like, no, it's not Mortal Kombat. I said, it's G.I. Joe. It's Snake Eyes, you know? And then he turned to me, and I was wearing the shirt, and I didn't even realize it. And he goes, oh, look, you're wearing the shirt on the pod. I was like, great. I'll definitely talk about that on the pod. I'm a huge Snake Eyes fan.
Are you?
Yes.
Did you have toys when you were a kid, the G.I. Joe toys?
Oh, yeah. I had all the... I had half the toys, and my friend had the other half of the toys.
So you are 46?
Yes, 47. 1974 in November. So November 1974, and it's 21. So 46. Yes, correct.
Yeah, my friend Brian, he's your age. He was born June 1974. No, 73. So he's a year older than you are.
Okay. Uh-huh.
And it's funny, though, how like those couple of years make a difference in toys and such.
Yeah.
I was never into G.I. Joe because by the time G.I. Joe came about, like I was like it like action figures just left my wheelhouse.
So what were your action figures then?
Well, mine were like Star Wars from.
Okay. Okay.
You know, they weren't A New Hope at the time, but.
But from that original trilogy, yeah.
The original trilogy, yeah. And it's funny, too, because I had Star Wars action figures from Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the time Return of the Jedi came out, I was like, it was like.
You're like, girls. I don't care what.
Exactly. Like, Return of the Jedi, I was like. Nope, I'm done. I'm not getting this stuff. And my friend was like, no, I'm still into this stuff. And I'm like, and I remember go hanging out with them. I'm like, dude, I'm just not into it. You know, like
it's over. It's over me.
It was like there's just this thing that happens in your brain that says, nope, I'm not shooting fake plastic guys anymore. You know, and yeah, and it was like sports and girls, I guess. I don't know. I played hockey and baseball and was hoping some girls were paying attention to my hockey and baseball. I don't even know what I was doing. But it wasn't action figures. But
that's hilarious.
So, yeah, I would say G.I. Joe I was not into.
Okay.
Action figure wise. However, the cartoons I still at that time was still I would still watch them. So at, I don't know, what is that, 13-ish? Maybe 12, 13 mm-hmm. when this stuff was out, I would still watch the cartoons. But the toys, nah, not really. Not so much.
So were you a Snake Eyes fan? What was your favorite G.I. Joe from the cartoon?
I couldn't even tell you. Who is the main bad guy?
Oh, Commander. What was his name? Cobra Commander with the silver.
Exactly.
Smooth silver face. And then Destro had the texture, like he had a metal face, but you could tell it was a face.
And Snake Eyes was the main G.I. Joe dude.
Snake Eyes was the main good ninja G.I. Joe.
Exactly, yeah.
And Storm Shadow was the white.
Yes.
Evil counterpart.
That's right. So trailers like this, I think Bryce is on point saying it's Mortal Kombat, because trailers like this have, I mean, they just follow the formula.
Right.
The music, the action, the cuts, the jump cuts, the back and forth. I mean, they follow the formula. They don't mix it up because it's the action you expect.
Expectations, yeah. Meet the expectations of the audience. It was especially noticeable. You know, they have the trailer to trailer, and it wasn't bothersome. It was some nice action in the trailer to trailer.
It flowed. I thought the trailer to the trailer was a good one because it wasn't jarring to the extent that when it ends and then the trailer begins, some of those are just like, oh my God,
bad transitions. Yeah.
Oh yeah. No, this was seamless.
And then there's that scene in the highway where the one car flips and they play this audio hit on there where it's like the stuttering of the audio as the
truck is flipping
over. That's exactly
what I'm talking about with the sound. Yeah.
And I was like, this is just sound design 101.
Exactly.
It's like
that's the
paint
formula.
By numbers. You have to do this if you're going to be successful in this space, I think. You know, it's not a knock on anything. It's like you have to do these things. You know what I mean?
Right, right. I mean, when you're talking about any movie that follows these tropes, you're talking Fast and the Furious. This is the sound design of those movies.
Right, right.
You're looking at anything gunplay. This is the sound design of those movies. I mean, and that's why I was saying it follows. It's a formulaic sound design that leads these down the path. And it's like if you step outside of that, everybody expects what it is. And when you don't do it, you're risking alienating that audience for this genre of movie.
Right. And then just one more callback to Bryce and I watching this together today, because now we're entering a zone where Bryce has done, he's been in the business auditioning for at least 2 years now. And he went up for a role in this movie. There's like a, you know, them as kids, you know, Henry Golding as a kid. And, you know, there's a battle between Storm Shadow and Snake Eyes as children. So Bryce had to act like a scared kid behind a sofa or something like that. And it was...
So he did an audition...
For this, yeah. Like a home self-tape.
For this movie?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So now we're at this weird phase where now everything we see out in the world... It's like, oh, yeah, that's a thing I didn't get. Like, because there's hundreds of things that he didn't get. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I tried out for the Philadelphia Phillies, but I guess I'm playing, like, bar league ball. You know, like, what?
But it's hilarious. You know, it's funny. You know, he's a good sport about it, so it's not crazy. But it is noticeable. You know what I mean? Like, we get the secret, you know, like, Ricardo, you know, can't disclose any of this stuff. But, you know, now that it's out, you know, coming out.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, it's not like I was divulging script information or anything. But
yeah, I'm so glad, you know, you shared all that with me. No, I'm just kidding. This is the first I'm hearing of it. Yeah, I mean, overall, though, I would say it looks like a fun movie. It's a popcorn movie. It's what we always say about explosion movies. I mean, yeah, it looks, you know, I mean, I don't know if I'm going to watch it. It's not necessarily in my wheelhouse. I think it's more for a younger generation.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be offended if I were to watch it.
Right.
You know, it's just one of those... Like, whatever, turn up the subwoofer and let the explosions rock the house, you know?
Are you a Henry Golding fan, though?
Mild.
Do you like this actor?
Mild.
He had that Last Christmas. I don't know if you've seen Last Christmas.
Was that the one with, it was like kind of a musical rom-com or something?
It was. Was it musical?
Maybe it wasn't musical,
It has Emily Clark.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, I know the one you're talking.
Did you see that one?
Yes.
Oh, I love that movie.
Yeah.
It's a great movie. Oh, yeah, it's musical because it's all George Michael. That's right.
Yes, that's right.
It's all George Michael songs. That's right.
And Emily Clark is the one from, she was the
Game of Thrones.
Dragon. Yeah, exactly. Game of Thrones. Yeah. Right.
She's a dragon. What is she? The Dragon Whisperer or something?
No. Now you got me confused. Dragonborn. No. Oh my goodness. You know, by the time you read books and watch shows and you forget, it's like, whatever. It's the sign of age.
Anyway, she's also in Solo. She's also the main squeeze in Solo.
That's right. She's in Solo too. But yeah, you're right though. Last Christmas, you know.
Yeah. But anyway, I love that movie, and it had a great, great twist. We won't give away the twist, but people should see it. It's a great twist.
So Disney's The Mysterious Benedict Society.
Yes, a beloved children's book series.
Series, right. I have a question, though, because it's a children's series. Is this a TV series or a movie? Because it didn't give it away.
Oh, it's a schmovie. It's a schmovie for sure.
Okay, that's what I was hoping for.
Yeah. Series. I thought it said series, but maybe I'm wrong.
Oh, you know what? I could have missed it.
I think Disney Plus is putting a lot of effort and energy into schmovies.
One, a few clues. Disney Plus. Two, it says book series. So make it a TV series.
Makes sense.
I don't know what to think about this. I mean, tweeners? It's for a tweener audience?
I think there's a nostalgia play for tweens. I think it's something that is cool enough for Bryce to get into, but nostalgic enough for Audrey to watch as well. You know what I mean? So Audrey remembers reading the books, and Bryce wants to read the books, but he's not too jazzed about reading.
Clarissa's a huge reader. She reads, you know, and I know I've talked about this in the past, but I mean,
yeah,
she'll
read Dune in a day.
She read, no, I'm serious though. She read all the Dunes.
Yeah.
I think it was like she read all the Game of Thrones books in 2 months. You know, she just plows through.
Consumes. Her and Audrey, man.
She eats, chews, and spits out books in like days. I mean, she could just plow through. But yeah, Audrey too. I mean,
yeah.
I remember you were telling me stories about Audrey just like devouring books.
5 million words. 5 million words in a year.
However many words it was. Right. She could just devour books.
I don't even know how that's enjoyable. Like, do you think that's enjoyable? I don't know. I don't have the same love affair with words per se. And when we have a book that we were reading as a family, and it was called The Heart of the Samurai. And it's about Monjiro, one of the first Japanese people that was saved by an American whaling boat in the Pacific and brought back to America. So one of the first Japanese people to come to America. And he actually arrived in America in May. And that's the reason Asian Pacific Islander Heritage Month is May, this month, the month of May.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's good trivia.
So and we ended up reading this book, and we finished the book in April. And I was like, oh, we should have just kept going. But every now and then the whole family takes turns reading chapters aloud to each other. And when I read a chapter to the family, it is comedy. Like, the whole family just rolls on the floor laughing at how bad daddy's read.
Because of your intonation and all that?
No, because I can't, because the words get jumbled on the page and I mix them up and I have a slight dyslexia, I guess.
Come on, Dad, you're so dumb.
Right. Exactly. Audrey's like, no wonder you hate reading. You read like a 5-year-old.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Man. That's so. You know, the funny thing is, though, like, I read as much as Clarissa.
Yeah.
I read nonfiction history and, you know, I don't know. I just read nonfiction and manuals.
Yeah.
I'll devour, you know, game manuals or, I don't know, history books or something, whatever I'm reading.
Right, right.
And then it's like, Jim, you have to read Harry Potter. Okay. The easiest reading on the planet took me like a year and a half because I kept falling asleep. You know, like.
Yeah.
I read one. So we have 5 Game of Thrones books. I read the first one. Took me forever. I kept falling asleep. I'm like, I read The Hobbit, right? Oh, The Hobbit. Yeah. I love the movies.
Fantasy.
I love Game of Thrones, Lord of the Rings, all that those, stuff. Yeah. I love it. I'm going to read the books. Oh my God, a page into it, I'm like, he's just describing a hillside for two pages. You know, like, I'm going to bed. You know, like, I just can't read fiction.
Well, I mean, what... When you watch Clarissa, when I watch Audrey read, they turn pages at a rate that is just like, that can't be enjoyable. Like, what is the
right? Yeah. I've told Clarissa, I said, when you read, do you like act the voices in your head?
Uh-huh.
She said, no, I don't even think of the voices. I just like,
it skips it. It's like an imprint of the word and it skips the whole verbal thing.
It's almost like she reads these fictional stories as if she's gathering information.
Like a computer.
Exactly. And when I read them, like, I'm using different voices for Frodo and
right.
Like Samwise or something. And like, I play out the voices in my head and like, I'm imagining.
And you ponder the scenery.
No, I totally
the scenery.
Do. And it's like, it could take me, you know, it could take me like 20 minutes to read a couple pages because like I'm imagining the scene and all this stuff.
And they're setting it up like that. You know what I mean? They have it all set
100%.
Up. They're describing the bush and you're like, oh, that's an interesting looking bush.
Exactly. And that's why when I read nonfiction, like, you know, history books about like war in the Balkans or something,
uh-huh.
You know, it's just, I just read the words and just like, it just pours over me.
Right.
And I think it's like, that's how it is for Audrey and Clarissa with nonfiction. It just pours over them. And when they read nonfiction, like War in the Balkans, they're trying to figure out the strategy and how that, and it's just, it doesn't work for them, you know? And it's like, maybe it's just an understanding of, I don't even know, but it's just so funny how that plays out in like the mind of a fiction reader to the mind of a nonfiction reader.
I will say that I can read, the only fiction I can read is Chuck Palahniuk. Do you know the author?
No, I never heard of that.
Yeah, well, he wrote Fight Club.
Oh, yeah. I never read it, but I hear it's amazing.
My favorite novel of his was Survivor. Of all authors, I've read 5 of his books or 6 of his books and 3 of Daniel Quinn books. Daniel Quinn did My Ishmael and Ishmael. Have you heard of those books?
Oh, I have, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, My Ishmael is all about the education system in America, basically. But yeah, they're both fiction, but they're kind of talked. They're that written in that first person, and they speak to the audience. They speak to the reader in a way that's very cinematic. So because it's cinematic, it breaks down that whole process for me. And, you know,
well, now that we've alienated both Goodreads and Trailer Junkies podcast. So the mysterious Benedict Society.
Oh, yes. Back to that, since that is a book series.
And we were talking about the audience being tweeners and, you know, and so on. What I noticed about this trailer, if you want to look at a brief trailer critique.
Yes.
Neutral. The critique's neutral. But the opening voiceover when they say, like, it's kind of like that modern day In a World, you know?
Right.
And it's like, kind of like that time gone by where they just say, like, kids, it's the book you've always enjoyed, and now we're making a TV show out of it. So come belly up to the TV.
I mean, it really screams of a series of unfortunate events.
Yes! That's what
so
I was thinking of, and I couldn't
it. Yeah.
place it. I couldn't put my thumb on it. Thank you for articulating that.
And it follows like the beats and the patterns and the quirkiness, the mise-en-scene, the scenery of the space, you know, all the way from to the backdrops look like beautiful wallpaper.
100%, yeah.
And then it looks like they spend all this time and effort and energy in this thing, and then they give away the farm. It's like they alienated me as a person who hasn't read the books but wants to watch this series. They alienated me by saying, like, oh, the master villain is my twin brother. Like, why do we need to divulge that in the trailer?
Why is that exposition given away in the first, like, why are you giving away the spoilers?
Yeah.
Right? No, yeah, I agree with you.
Don't spoil this in the trailer. Like, okay, I guess the majority of your audience will already know this, but maybe this small sliver, this 10% of people like me that have watched their children read and consume these books and talk to their friends about it, and my wife and my daughter bonded over this book series. So I was like,
that's so cool.
This is great. Now I'm going to get to bond with them over the TV series, and Bryce and I'll get in the TV series with the two girls.
Nice.
But I was like, but now you've ruined one part of it for me that I didn't have to be ruined. Like, I don't think it's additive of the trailer.
No, I agree with you.
I don't want to get too, I probably work with these people, so I don't want to get too hoity-toity about that.
No, but I mean, I think you have a good critique, though, in that giving away the exposition of the story and everything, but to spoil it, to say that, you know, this guy's related to this guy, and that kind of creates the tension and the resolution all within the trailer. Why do I need to watch it now?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't take me that far. It's to me, it's more like you've robbed me of one scene's tension. You've robbed me of one reveal that could have been satisfying, but now it is expected.
Or perhaps I'm hopeful that what you're showing me is going to lead to something far greater.
Yes.
Maybe that's where it is.
Maybe.
So, Ten, have you ever heard of the concept of meta-watching?
No. Tell me about this. I love this idea. Just conceptual. Just verbally, it sounds so tantalizing.
Okay, cool. I'm glad, because I searched all over the internet for meta-watching.
Uh-huh.
And I think I coined a new phrase.
Oh, nice.
So what I say, so are you familiar with metacognition or being metacognitive?
No, tell me.
In other words, it's like a philosophical thing, right? Knowing about knowing, right? It's metacognitive.
Okay, yes. Okay.
So meta-watching. So if you think about meta-watching, it's when it's like episode, and I think I coined something here, and someone's going to steal it from me, and I'm going to see it all over the internet now.
There we go. That's when you've succeeded, by the way.
Yeah, just attribute it to Trailer Junkies podcast, so at least we get listeners. But meta-watching, I think, is when it's episode 2 of a show, and the lead character is in peril, but you say the writers would never kill off the character now. It's only episode 2.
Uh-huh. Right, right.
So you take yourself out of the character. You take yourself out of the show.
Story, right.
Out of the story, and you start thinking about it in terms of writing and producing and directing.
Okay.
And you say, like, well, the show wouldn't happen this way because, or the show is going to happen this way because, and you start adding in, like, you know, the knowledge you have of movies and writing and producing and directing and and all that kind of stuff, rather than taking on the role and the persona and the emotions of the character. So it's as if it's like meta watching.
Yeah. No, I get it. I like it.
And I was watching The Handmaid's Tale, and she's just in these things, and they're like bombing her and stuff, and it blows up, and the episode ends with her, like, you know, after the bombing of these F-18s or whatever come in, and Clarissa's like, oh my God, and like Clarissa's in the show, right? She's in the character,
right.
Like, she's not thinking outside of that.
Right. Jack Bauer in 24.
100%. That was my exact thing that I was thinking of. And we talk about 24 a lot in this show because that's kind of where those things come from.
Right, right.
Everybody's dead but Jack Bauer, right?
Right.
Or maybe another way to say that is no one's safe but Jack Bauer. So as a watcher of the show, you could say, you know, Tony or any of the other characters, they could die off, but Jack won't.
Any moment, right.
And when Jack's in the worst, most dire situation possible, you're going to say, well, Jack's going to come out of it because, like, they'll never write him out, because if they do, the show's over. And that's like meta-watching.
Yeah.
So I think there's like something there, and I can't say I'm the first to think about that in or think about watching shows in that way, but maybe I put a name to it, you know,
a term on it. Yeah, name to it.
But it kind of ruins watching, and it also holds writers to a higher standard.
Well, I will say, like, I think it's David E. Kelly. Let me double check this. Hold on. This Big Sky. Have you seen this? So I watch Big Sky.
Big Sky sounds familiar.
Big Sky is a TV show that I watched. It's weird. TV series now are like three parts, and it's streaming, and it's all broken up.
What do you mean three parts? Not three episodes.
No, it took a break for winter.
Oh, okay.
It took like a seasonal break between the winter, but then it picked up again. But it's still season one. You know what I mean? But David E. Kelly is the producer of this show. And the whole lead up of the whole thing says Ryan Phillippe, right? They talk about the lead main character, Ryan Phillippe. Ryan Phillippe is the, you know, the male lead in this show. And, you know, spoiler alert, you know, he's looking for the bad guys. The bad guys are murdering girls and shipping girls to Canada as slaves or,
oh,
you know,
man,
whatever, human trafficking.
Right, right.
And three episodes in, he's with one of the suspects. And he gets shot in the face, killed, murdered. And I was like, they spent like a year promoting this as this guy's show. And he's like the main lead. And he's got an ex-wife and a girlfriend and their partners all in this detective agency together, the three of them. So it's this love triangle for three episodes. It's all this stuff going on. And then he's like, all right, ladies, I'm going to go check out this guy, you know, see what he's got to offer for this case, you know. And he goes and he meets the guy, and the guy shoots him in the face, and he buries him in the country because it's Montana, you know. It's just,
you know what that's not called?
What's that?
Or, you know, maybe, not called call. I don't even know. That's not meta watching.
No, I think it's the creator's understanding of meta watching.
That's what I mean. It's like the antithesis of it.
It's like shocking your audience into watching it more intently.
You expected the main character to go on, and he didn't. So there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's in a couple more episodes as like a
memory
flashback or a memory, or like the girlfriend is all, you know, when they find the body and stuff. So, you know, they have this weird love triangle with the dead guy, you know, and so it's the knowing, it's this creator's understanding of what you're talking about. But maybe, you know, David E. Kelly hasn't put a term to it like you have. So there you go, David E. Kelly. Now you have a term for this, meta-watching, where...
Meta-watching, yeah.
You've shaken your audience into out of meta-watching because you just killed the main character.
Yeah, and then, you know, just to finish it off, so that was what I got out of The Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah. Oh, and on Handmaid's Tale, sorry.
Yeah, yeah, no, go for it.
The thing that I like, and I don't watch Handmaid's Tale, but the peril that the main character... Like in Handmaid's, I guess I watched a season of Handmaid's Tale. The peril that I have for Elizabeth Moss, or whatever her name is,
June,
the show.
But yeah, Elizabeth June. Moss is the actress. Right?
She's going to lose an eye, another eye, and they'll cut her tongue out. You know what I mean? They'll chop a limb off, you know? Like, she's in mortal peril in a way that would be extremely excruciating. You know, she'd be raped, you know, like.
So in other words, they don't kill her off, but they just like dismantle her like limb by limb.
Yeah. Or just put her through the same psychological terrors
exactly.
that she goes
yeah,
through on a regular
I mean.
Basis. Sometimes it's worse than death. You know what I mean? So.
Well, you know, I'm like three episodes ahead of you or no. Season.
Three seasons. Ahead
yeah. Whatever it is. I don't know. This 10.5% is pretty good. Yeah, so we watched Thor: The Dark World.
Okay, the driest of the Thor movies.
You know, I gotta say though, watching all the movies a second run through, and in timeline order, I am loving it.
Yeah. You pick up on so many more. It's so textual.
There's so much more going on. You learn so much more. Like, yeah, it's the driest of the Thors, but I love that movie. It was so good. It was so good, you know? And
right. The ether is there. Yeah.
And you just like learn so much more. Like it's so like chunky as far as the meat that it provides you of the Tesseract and all the, you know, all the stuff. I mean,
yes, yes. The history, it really is. It proves the well-woven story of Infinity War.
Yeah. Skarsgård. Yeah. When Stellan Skarsgård's running around with pixelated, like, nudity, and my kids are like, why is he naked? And then Tim's just like, I loved how his butt crack was pixelated, you know? And, and, you know, they're just laughing at how he's, like, naked but pixelated, you know, and stuff. I mean,
Right.
I'll have to say that was another... I still think so far Iron Man 2 is my favorite.
Okay.
But I think Iron Man 3 is the next one to come.
Oh, nice. Okay.
But man, Thor Dark World was awesome. I didn't, you know, and the first go through, the first run through, man, like I didn't like any of these.
You just missed all of it.
I hated Iron Man 2. I didn't
really
like, I fell asleep, I think, to Dark World stuff. And, you know, and I think when you're watching them out of timeline order, you just don't understand what's happening.
Right.
So you're just like, I don't get it. I'm just going to check out right now. Where when you watch it in timeline order, you're like, oh, my God, that attached to that goes to that. And you start like piecing it together and you're like, this makes perfect sense.
A beautiful tapestry is coming together for you. It's amazing.
That's it, man. Yeah, and then Cursed, we're still doing that on Netflix.
You're plodding through that one, huh?
Yeah, there's like, I think we have like one or two more episodes, and then we watched the latest episode of The Bad Batch.
Okay, how was that? Did you...
I think we're like, okay, when I was in college and graduate school, say it was like 15 weeks in a semester, and by the time you're like in week, say it's 15 weeks, you're in week like 7.
Right.
I used to call that the mid-semester doldrums.
Oh.
I feel like that's where we are with the Bad Batch. Like,
yeah,
we're just like, we're there. Like, week in, week out, they're just going to like just fill time.
I think I go into every episode now, hoping, you know, bracing myself for that. I did like this week's episode a little bit more than normal.
But you called it, though.
Yeah. But I think Omega had...
Because Omega's the center of things.
Everything, yeah.
Yeah.
And I was like, this whole episode, I was like, oh, she's going to reveal her power. She's going to reveal her power. Like,
right.
Like, she has to have some kind of supernatural power or something that makes her special. I like the reveal of Ming-Na Wen's character from The Mandalorian. You know, did you recognize her from The Mandalorian?
I did. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, so that's an interesting part of the process. And then our family got into a bit of an argument about Grogu. And I said, oh, yeah, Grogu's a clone.
First world argument.
Grogu's a clone and Omega's a clone. So it makes a lot of sense. And
wait, who's a clone?
I said Grogu's a clone. And
Grogu's a clone?
No. And Ann says, Grogu's not a clone. Grogu's the basis of a clone. And then Bryce.
Wait, why would Grogu be a clone?
Well, because he's being studied by the clones, and he was in that Kamino scientist at the beginning of Mandalorian that was with them trying to, you know, get Grogu's blood.
Oh, see.
From Kamino.
Oh, I didn't know that was... Okay, whatever. Sure, go ahead.
But that's what Anne was saying, like, no, Grogu's not a clone. They're using Grogu's blood that's rich in mitochondria, or whatever it's called. Midichlorian.
Yeah, thank you for ruining all of Star Wars, Mr. Lucas.
The powerhouse of the cell. No, not that.
Right.
But Anne was like, no, he wasn't a clone. He was the basis of a clone. And then Bryce put on his Well, actually, it is a theory in some circles that Grogu was a clone. Bryce was defending me.
But isn't it amazing when your offspring is just like smarter than you?
Or just watches enough YouTube to be like dangerous.
There is that too, because sometimes Tim does the same thing. I'll be like, all right, Tim, this is where we are with this. He's like, well, let me tell you though. So, you know, I was watching, yeah, exactly, YouTube or whatever he's watching. I'm like, what? How do you know this? He's like,
it's common knowledge.
But no, he'll like name the guy, like,
oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
The clone astrologist on YouTube was telling me all about. I'm just like, okay, you win.
Yeah, yeah. That's hilarious.
So, what have you guys been watching?
Well, we watched a movie. Oh, so we've been watching a lot of Psych. You know, the TV show from USA back in the day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And we.
That's awesome. Wow.
And we love it as a family. It's something we can all agree to watch.
Oh, we got to get back to that.
It is hilarious. Anne hates it because Sean Spencer's Peter Pan character that never grows
That's
up,
so funny,
you know,
right.
And Gus is forever like his straight man, but they're just hilarious together. And it's just so well encapsulated. You know, it's a, what do you call those movie, the TV shows?
Schmovies.
That nothing ever changes. No, it's
never changes.
Oh man, yeah. Law and Order is an example of it. Now I can't even.
Oh, I really don't know. This is interesting. So
this is yeah. So I there's a whole please learn there's a whole me. Genre of television shows that oh here nah, I remember the word. There's a whole series of television shows that's called procedurals.
Oh, I have heard of that. Yes, procedurals. Right.
Yeah. At the beginning of the show and the end of the show, all the main characters that you love it week in week out have not changed at all. and they're
one dimensional.
They basically just solve a case in every episode.
Right.
And that's the same thing that they do here. And it's so funny to watch, to listen to my family and watch my family. And the minute we get introduced to like these extra characters, they're like, oh, she did it. She's the one who did it. You know what I mean? And like you get introduced to like 10 characters.
Because why else would she be there?
Right. You get introduced to 10 characters and then, you know, everybody's saying this person did it or that person did it. And of course, there's red herrings all over the place. And, you know, not everybody's all right. But usually there's some intricacy to the way that they've woven the why they did it, you know. And so it's just fun to watch over dinner or something like that. But we were watching it over the weekend and we had a little bit of a marathon. We were watching a couple of episodes and I was like, oh, let's take a break from this because there was something I wanted to see on something else. And I saw, I made us take a break for The Personal Life of David Copperfield.
Oh, the Spirit of Illusion.
Have you seen that?
Right?
Is it David Copperfield? Oh, am I saying it wrong? No,
David, he's a magician guy.
No, maybe I'm not. Maybe the Personal Life. I thought this is the Oliver Twist. Who got that?
Oh, you're talking about what's the British author?
Yeah, the Christmas Carol.
Dickens. Yes, Dickens, Charles Dickens.
Charles Dickens, right? So he wrote a...
David Copperfield. Okay, yeah.
He wrote a book called David Copperfield, and they did a modern retelling in 2019 of it where Dave Patel plays David Copperfield.
Oh, very cool. I'll have to check that out.
And it has this multicultural cast. It is amazing. It's an amazing storytelling.
It's like 1890s England.
Exactly. 1840s, I'm looking
oh,
eight, at right
Oh,
now.
Okay, okay, sure.
Even earlier than that. But, you know, it's just the separation of the rich to the poor. And David Copperfield goes from being rich to being poor to being rich to being poor. And just goes through all the paces. And the manner in which the filmmaker, the cinematography of this movie was great. They did some scenes where the characters are in a scene talking about another time, another place.
What did you watch it on?
Oh, man. What did we watch it on? One of the streamers. I think it was Amazon or something like that.
Okay.
I'll find out.
Okay.
I'll let you know. But they, like, he's talking to one of his friends about something that happened to him. and they project it on the wall behind them.
Oh, okay.
So it's like a projection within a movie about a memory or another time. And then they have like, they're in a place where there's like curtains or tapestry, and they just blow a big wind and the tapestry blows away. And behind the tapestry is like a field where they're actually running and into the next scene. And the transitions are beautiful like that.
Now, it wasn't intended to be a stage play.
No, I mean, it,
but it plays like a stage play.
It opens in a an old 1800s theater with Dave Patel walking out on a stage to tell his story.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And then, you know, the red curtains that are behind him, they blow open into the field behind him. And the camera and the audience just get transposed, taken into the space. Yes. And it's just, they have, you know,
I love that.
A dozen transitions in the movie that are like that.
Oh, man, we got to watch that. That sounds amazing.
And it was a perfect respite from like Psych, which is just like, you know, your mind's just always working. And this is just like, just let it take over, you know?
You know, it's funny, though. I remember I first learned of and was exposed to Charles Dickens as a freshman in high school. And, you know, you read like, I don't even remember it was a short story. I think it was Great Expectations or something.
Okay.
And you read it and you're just like, okay, a crazy old lady in a house, you know, who doesn't want to come outside and is full of cobwebs.
Yeah.
And whatever. But over the years, you learn about Charles Dickens.
Charles Dickens.
And, you know, I've read David Copperfield, and there was a couple other ones I've read of him. I don't know why I had the books at home, but I did. And it was one of those things where my parents grounded me and said, no TV. You know, you just have these books and stuff, and it's just like, I guess I'll read them because, like, I'm grounded from TV.
Right.
You know, for whatever knuckleheaded reasons I did. But I just love these kinds of stories. And these stories lead you into like a whole other world of, man, I don't even know how to describe it, but it's like,
yeah,
it's like the world that you have, but it's 100 years earlier and it's so different, but yet it's so much exactly what you have.
Right.
You know, like it just transcends time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's so amazing. I just love that kind of stuff. And I hope my kids, you know, we're going to go to the bookstore tomorrow because they have a birthday party. And we all, as a school psychologist, I always give books, right? Because,
oh, you and Ann love with the book gifts.
Oh, we give books and, you know, and we find what the kid's into.
Mm-hmm.
The kid's into such and such video games. We find books around those video games.
Right.
They're into whatever TV shows. We find books because...
Gateway drugs to book reading.
Exactly. I want kids to read books, you know? And that was the thing that got me into reading was... You could come up with, you know, I don't know, Star Wars or something, and then you come up with, like, other sci-fi stuff. I mean, I have Clarissa reading some sci-fi now from books I had.
Ooh, The Fountain?
No, The Mote in God's Eye.
Okay.
So it's, I think it's Jerry Parnell and Larry Nevins or something. And I think they both passed away recently. But, you know, I get into, like, stuff, like, if you think about, like, oh, and that's another thing we've been watching, too. The original Star Trek.
Okay.
So we've been watching those.
The boys love it.
No, just me and Clarissa have been watching them.
Oh, my.
I should show them to the boys. I haven't yet, but, like, it is so, like, on so many levels, it's so ahead of its time.
Uh-huh.
And on so many other levels, you're just cringing. You're like, oh, my God, it's so sexist.
Oh, yeah.
Or racist or, you know, whatever it is. However,
right.
It is way ahead of its time on those same sexist and racist things.
Right.
Yeah, it's like Gene Roddenberry was brilliant and ignorant at the same exact time.
I mean, for his time, he was breaking down the walls of what was expected and what was allowed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but it's...
And it's so funny, to bring it full circle, there was one episode of Psych where they go to a comic book convention And you know, all the tickets are all sold out, but they're trying to like go in undercover to this comic book convention.
And dude, we need to do that one of these days.
And they pretend to be Sulu's personal assistant. and then what's his name? Who's Sulu in real life?
Oh, okay. You caught me off guard. Hold on. I'm going to cut this together and we're going to sound brilliant.
Star Trek Sulu. Let's see.
The Man Trap. Dean Roddenberry. Oh, George Takei.
George Takei.
Wait a minute. Why is his first episode called The Man Trap?
He knew it. They knew he was gay. Yeah. Anyway. So Sean and Gus pretend to be Sulu or, you know, George Takei's personal assistant, and they
George Takei,
and they come in and they're making demands for him all over the place, left and right, and then out walks George Takei like as the guest star for the episode, and George Takei's like, "Who are you? You're not my assistant."
Wasn't he on Big Bang Theory or something too? And he must have. He must have been, yeah.
I think so. He likes playing into his role, you know.
Right.
He embraces it.
Hey man, all I gotta say is own it. Just own it.
Yeah. Why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you just love it?
100%.
But he was like, it's so funny because he was like, "You're not my assistant." Or you're not Colleen or whatever it was, and you know, and Sean's so smooth. He's always like, "Oh, Colleen hired us from the local, you know, assistance pool." You know what I mean? So he basically conned his way into being George Takei's assistant, and Gus was a huge fan of George Takei, so he gets all starstruck, and then the whole time Sean's blaming Gus for all the stuff that goes wrong for George Takei. So George Takei basically fires Gus and says, "I only want to deal with you, Sean." So it's just a well put together show. Anyway,
can't wait. But all right, I'm going to leave you on this, and then we'll cut out of here.
Okay,
your family and my family, we need to go to some like Gen Con or Dragon Con or Comic Con or some of these conventions, whatever, some nerd convention. Because like we are all into this.
Yes.
We go, we dress up, we do our thing, you know, and then when people say like, "Why are you here?" We're like, "We're Trailer Junkies Podcast." And
there
they're like,
go.
"Who is that?" But I'm serious though, like we need to do something like that, you know, or
well, we just need to get together. Like Ann and I were talking about
100%.
Memorial Day coming up, and we're like, "Oh, well, maybe not that, but we got to do it sometime this summer's here, and we need to get these kids out and about.
Summer's here, we're all vaccinated, and
it is
what it is." So, but until then, Ted, I'd say we cut out of here and we'll see you next week.
All right. Have a good one. See you next week.
You too, man. Later.
Bye.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the Holy Trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.